As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to the TIFO Football Podcast. I'm Joe Devine and I'm delighted to be joined today by JJ Bull the Bullard.
Hello.
Hello there. Welcome.
Hi.
Yes. Jonathan Dog McKenzie.
Hello, Joe.
All right, how's it going?
Yeah, good, thanks.
And we're joined by a special guest today, aren't we? A little baby of...
Keep going.
A tiny cherub, little baby boy. There he is. No, it's... what's his name? What's the manager's name?
Patrick Vieira.
Patrick, we're not joined by Patrick Vieira.
I thought you were asking what my name is.
Not your name. Vieira has been sacked. And we found in the office this Crystal Palace fan hanging around. So we thought, get him in the studio and then we'll ask him questions about that and indeed other things. It's Ruben Pinder.
Whee!
Yay!
Thank you.
A new employee
to throw names at. Now, what is there on the list of things to discuss today? And Steve, I'm on the wrong bit of the plan.
I've got one for you.
Yeah?
Kiwi fruits aren't marketed properly. They're delicious and no one buys them and they need better marketing.
It's interesting.
Do you not think?
I bought two the other day, didn't eat them, threw them out.
But people often do that. Do you not think they're really, so delicious, kiwi fruits? They just need to be marketed better.
That's right, JJ, and more about tasty, succulent foods, because we're going to discuss all the football. Put it in your mouth. Now, what did we discuss? We discussed Patrick Vieira's sacking at Crystal Palace. We did that a lot with Ruben Pinder. What else do we have on here? Ah, a dissection of Heath and Heathland. What does it all mean? How much of that will be kept in? It'll be looking forward to hearing. Antonio Conte had a strange weekend, didn't he? Said a lot of stuff. We talked about all of that. And then Spurs. Then there was a break. Oh, the quarterfinal draw for the Champions League. That's actually some very good games in the quarterfinal draw of the Champions League. Fun to discuss those, as well as our favourite video games, romping versus bowling. And if you would like to have a romp through... And that was a strange cut on account of something that happened where there was no way of getting out without redoing the bit before. But if you like to find a sort of roundabout way of doing things, but when you do it, you realize this was the best way. Why didn't I do this before? You should visit The Athletic. Visit theathletic.com/TIFO, theathletic.com/TIFO. Because when you do, you'll realize that your life before was without meaning. Yes. There we go. Anyway, there's so much today. We talked about so much today. But for now, I will leave you in the warm hands and the cool embrace of the little baby cherub. The tiny baby. Small little baby is Ruben Pinder.
Yeah. Cheers.
Arsenal 4, 1 Crystal Palace, Ruben Pinder. Now, I don't care about Arsenal, let's not talk about them, although they were impressive and we should begin this section by saying that not that many teams score that many goals against Crystal Palace this season. Having said that, the reason that we're discussing Crystal Palace is because their manager, whose name I've forgotten.
Patrick Vieira.
No longer their manager.
As soon as they are fired, they lose relevance to me. And that's why I forgot that one. But Patrick Vieira, of course, lost his job last week after a turgid run of form, I think you can call it. A bit of an odd one, though, isn't it? Because, I mean, the elements of them last season, they were superb. They had a great finish to the season. But the turgid run has really done the deed here, it seems.
Yeah. He has been stitched up a little bit by the fixture schedule because there was a run of games against very good teams. And now he's been sacked just before a run of games against teams all in the bottom eight. So if you were to mix that up and, you know, the losses were, you know, broken up by the occasional win, then it might not look as bad. Mm. But this terrible run of form has led to a horrible loss of confidence and momentum. And watching them is quite a bleak experience at the moment.
Well, I was going to ask, you probably watch them as many weeks as you can. And I've heard it said by others that it's not really clear what they're trying to do with the ball. I mean, I suppose that's the reason that there was the stretch of three games where they didn't have a shot on target and why they've only scored four goals this year so far.
Yeah, and the same thing happened at Nice, as you guys mentioned last week. Like,
Patrick Vieira was manager
of Nice. Yeah, nobody is quite sure what his philosophy is. So last season, Conor Gallagher arrived from Chelsea on loan. We got new centre-backs who were young, mobile, good with the ball, and that allowed us to completely change our style of play because the centre-backs could run backwards, whereas like Scott Dann and Gary Cahill couldn't. So we went from parking the bus to playing really aggressively, and Gallagher was completely key to that. And it seems kind of simplistic and reductive to boil it down to with Gallagher good, without Gallagher bad. But even last season, when he wasn't allowed to play against Chelsea in the cup semi and the two league games, and he had like a little period of injury, we were nowhere near as good. And then James McArthur has also missed the whole season with injury. We didn't really replace Gallagher. So you've got Jeffrey Schlupp starting in midfield most weeks. And would he start for anybody else in the league? Probably not. So there are some good players in the team, as we've discussed beforehand. Elise Zaha, you know, Gaye, Anderson, Decore. But there's no depth. We're always one injury away from James Tompkins or Joel Ward or Jeffrey Schlupp, or Jordan Ayew,
sure,
or Luka Milivojevic playing. And none of them would play for any other teams in the league. So, yeah.
You didn't mention Eze there in that list.
He's not having the best year.
He's gone off the boil.
He has. And a part of that is, well, Vieira didn't seem to trust him to do his defensive duties as like the most advanced midfielder. So he kind of became an impact sub, but that impact diminished over time. And I wonder how much of it is down to that very long Achilles injury that he had, where maybe his explosive burst of like a few yards or his agility has kind of suffered. But he came on against Brighton and looked really short of any confidence and just like couldn't retain the ball at all. So that's not ideal.
It's worth saying, John McKenzie, we talked about this just before we started recording. The difference between this season and last season seems to largely be Conor Gallagher. You said, how can it be that it's just one player? Do you want to discuss that here?
Well, I remember being fairly sceptical about Patrick Vieira as an option. And so when something like this season happens, I can just sort of sit back a bit smug and be like, well, you know, I was a bit sceptical of Patrick Vieira. But I went back and had a look.
It does sound like you.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. I went back and looked at the numbers from last season, and Palace were pretty much the sixth best team in the league according to the underlying numbers. Now, the underlying numbers are the underlying numbers, but they've gone from being like a very competent team to being a team who looked devoid of ideas. And maybe I'm tactics pilled, but I don't think that I just can't bring myself to think that one player can have that amount of effect on a team that when they aren't. I mean, I agree that Gallagher is an important player for them last season, but
I think you're tactics pilled. I mean, do you remember that period of time under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer whenever, you know, the odd game that Bruno Fernandes would miss, they were like a completely different team? Do you not think sometimes it's about a bit more than the system?
Sure, but when it comes to Gallagher, I mean, he's not giving you that necessarily that attacking upside in quite the same way, right? He was much more important in terms of the energy out of possession and holding things together in that way. And I think that what's happened is that this team is now much less able to do things with the ball than it was, and I can't see it simply being down to Gallagher himself, but
it's kind of what Gallagher represents. It's the energy that he put in, and other players as well. And there's maybe an element of us being worked out a little bit, because last season Palace were new to playing that kind of football, and now people kind of they've worked out what Palace did last season, and without Gallagher, it's a lot easier to stop, I guess.
There's definitely an aspect, I think, in the Premier League where you get a year, maybe, of playing away before teams start recognising what you're doing. But also, I think when you're a team who people expect to be in the bottom half, they play against you as though you are a bottom half team. And then as soon as you're a team like Palace, then who have a good season and the numbers say that you're actually a top half side, oppositions change the way they play against you. They can start sitting deeper and they can stop giving you space. It's something that's happened with Newcastle this season, for example. In the first half, people didn't expect Newcastle to be Champions League contenders. And now I think we're seeing Newcastle having to grind out results because they are being forced to play in a different way as well.
That reminds me of when Leicester won the league. It didn't seem to happen to them. Everybody still played against them as if they could break them down and batter them. Mm. And it worked. Maybe everyone's learned from that.
I listened to Dom Fifield on the Athletic Football podcast last week. This was actually just before Vieira lost his job. It was one of those podcasts that they recorded beforehand and released, and then within probably half an hour, Vieira had actually gone. But the content is still very relevant before as it was afterwards. He said that he thought last season, their cup run and the way in which they finished the season kind of obscured the murkier elements of their performance. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, 100%. There was a run in the middle of the season where we didn't win for ages, but nobody cared because we beat Everton 4-0 in the FA Cup a year ago today, actually. And how far we've come.
Yeah.
How far we've regressed, I should say.
How far you've come back in the wrong direction.
Backwards, yeah.
It's all a matter of perspective.
But yeah, I mean, because for clubs like Palace, who have literally never won a major trophy, trip to Wembley and the potential of another FA Cup final makes up for not winning in the league.
Yeah.
And there's scary parallels to Pardew's time at Palace as well. He lasted a bit longer, but we went on a dreadful run of league form under him, but we still got to an FA Cup final. So people were like, this is actually worth it. Mm. But yes, that is true. So it's not just now that the problems have arisen.
Yeah, sure.
I was going to mention the conversation we had yesterday where we talked about the getting a benefit from a previous manager.
Okay.
Shall I mention that?
Yeah.
You're going to do it.
No, go on, you go.
I was going to say...
What are you going to say? Just say something about...
I was going to say, we were chatting yesterday while we were playing our favourite game, Rocket League.
Oh, yeah.
And I was suggesting to you the idea that maybe certain managers who come in...
This is what he does, by the way, when we're trying to play games and have fun, is he suggests ideas to me, do you know? He has big thoughts and then he tries to communicate them to me and I go, yes, John.
And then we lose the game that we're playing.
Do try to save that goal instead of pontificating. But please pontificate here. This is the appropriate environment.
It is, isn't it? We're not going to give up any goals here. But I'd be interested in your thoughts on this because I was saying that it seems like some managers come into a club and they give a level of freedom to players that they've not had before. And in the short term, that can be a good thing because obviously they're used to playing a really strict structures and it's nice to just be a little bit more free. But the problem is that as time goes by, they lose those structures because they're not being coached in those structures and so things fall away. And I wondered if you think there's any element of that happening with Hodgson having a fairly strict structure and then Vieira coming in being a little bit more free, changing things up a little bit, and them enjoying the benefits of Hodgson's structure, but the benefits of Vieira's freedom as well at the same time. Do you think there's anything in that?
Yes, I hadn't thought about it like that before, but that's exactly what happened. Wilfried Zaha last season was actually smiling when he was playing football rather than shouting a lot because he was finally able to attack and he had a little bit of help and he had another winger to take the attention off him like he had in Bolasie. When Elise arrived, everybody stopped tripling up on him. So he could have some fun. It felt like he had the team that he deserved. And now everything slowly started to go backwards a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think in the game against Arsenal, there was a moment. Now, I never question his attitude or how much he cares. But there was a moment just before Arsenal's first goal when Ben White intercepted the ball and he just stood still. And I kind of understand how fed up he is, given that exactly what you just explained has happened. Yeah.
What do you think, JJ?
I think Crystal Palace just aren't very good and they're stuck at a level where they can't really get out of it. They have no money, they don't invest. Until this weekend, they were only 3 points off. Now they're 6 points off where they were last season.
Yeah,
I think Hodgson put principles in place that made him very hard to beat. I totally agree with that point, that when you come in as a different manager, you then benefit from that. I think Roberto Martinez inherited a team that was really well drilled solidly at Everton, I think, and then tried to make them whatever they were afterwards, then it just fell apart. And that's one other example I can think of off the top of my head. I think the players that like Zaha, Olise and Eze, I think they're all really good individual players, but I don't think they're of a yet of a level where they would make a top six team better, so therefore they're kind of middling.
And Zaha might or might have done over the last couple of years.
In the past, like he's there was a while ago where I thought he'd be good enough for one of the very best teams. But
Arsenal certainly seemed to try to get him for
he's missed his window now, hasn't he?
He did that and didn't do that, right?
Well,
he
at a very young age, though, I would say.
We don't talk about that year. That didn't happen.
But regardless, what they've always lacked, or for the last few seasons, is lacked someone who can really finish chances, the striker, because all clubs miss a player who's like that because they're very expensive and Palace don't invest money in those sorts of players.
Worth saying to add to that point as well, that whilst I'm sure fans wouldn't be disappointed necessarily that Christian Benteke specifically had left, he wasn't replaced.
Well, Matata, who's rubbish. But there's more. Like Conor Gallagher, I think, is an enormous miss. They look at Fulham without Gerard Pellegrino this season. I think John's watched a lot of them recently, but to me they're not the same. And you just see it in the his absence, I think, an awful lot. And Gallagher, in terms of energy, yes, that's a thing that we all know he does and he brings that, but he was one of the top receivers in the final third like last season. I mean, he received the ball in the box more than like most Palace players. He was essentially an extra forward. So you miss that. It's enormous at that level. Palace are just one of these teams that are stuck between 12th and 20th. If they get a few games that go their way, last season they beat Man City, I think, twice. So they drew once and beat them once. That shouldn't happen.
Beat them away.
So that's against what should have happened. If they hadn't won those two games, they'd be exactly where they are now and you're thinking that Vieira's not that good. So that a lot of the like, lucky results disguise how good a manager actually is. Vieira might be fine, but there's very little that you can do. Like, if you wonder what his philosophy is, what are you meant to do with this team? You can only really do a couple of things. Make them hard to break down and hit in the counter-attack, which is what they've done forever under Hodgson and will do again when he inevitably comes back in. Or you try and adapt them to make them more attacking and then you see loads of chances and you end up where you are right now. Like the PPDA, passes per defensive action, a unit to measure how good a team is at pressing or how intensely they press. Shows that they went up immediately after Hodgson because that's what Vieira wanted and people liked that and you saw the change.
The PPDA went up.
It did. And then this season, as soon as they, at the start of their season, they played like Man City, Arsenal, Liverpool, Newcastle, Brentford, and I think everyone, maybe Brighton as well at the start of the season.
The PPBDA went down.
It dropped off a cliff.
Yeah. It fell off a cliff.
So, it actually went up because that's the higher number, the worse you are, right?
It went. Yeah.
So it's changed. Then it's coming back round. You would see that probably change again because the fixtures will change.
Where will it go now? Up again? Down again?
Well, Hodgson will probably come in and then it will probably stay low because you'll want to see loads of possession and space so they can attack it with those players and you're sort of trapped watching that.
This is the real question stumbled onto there, JJ Bull. The only manager so far as we start recording that's really being actively linked with Palace is Roy Hodgson, Ruben Pinder, who seems like a lovely chap.
He does. 75 years old, I think.
Obviously, he'd done a good job there in the past. I think you know what you will get. Let me just tell you before you speak about that, their list of upcoming fixtures here. I think this will be instructive. At home to Leicester, away to Leeds, away to Southampton, at home to Everton, away to Wolves, and at home to West Ham. That feels, like, important.
Yeah. It's terrifying because all of those games, a lot of fans are like, oh, we'll be fine. Look at this run of fixtures we've got. But all
it's
of those...
six pointers in a row.
Yeah. All of those teams are also looking at the game against us, though, going, that's three easy points.
Yeah.
So, but this is kind of why people feel like Vieira was slightly harshly done because he didn't get that run.
Yeah.
And I don't think Hodgson is the right manager to attack those games because we've actually been defensively okay, barring the four goals conceded against Arsenal. Like there was a lot of 1-0 losses in the last couple of months, or a few like 1-1 draws. We need more goals, and I'm not sure Hodgson is going to do that. But he doesn't have that much to work with because Mateta, as we've established, is not great. But just briefly going back to a point JJ made about like the finances, we don't sell players for profit ever. The last player we sold for a profit, I think, was Aaron Wan-Bissaka to Man United like 4 years ago. Almost.
And it does seem like you want to buy him back, or at least at times it has.
And that, because all the money that we've spent on players like Gehi and Anderson, Decore, Elise, Eze, that's created a very decent starting 11, but there's no depth to it at all.
Yeah.
So, like as I said earlier, the starting 11 kind of masks how bad the squad is overall.
That's relevant to Vieira, because then... I did a video on Crystal Palace last week when Vieira got done, and a lot of the research
with Matt Wisnam, right, the Athletic's Crystal Palace writer. Yeah,
he gave us some colour, which is very useful. A lot of the feedback from other Palace fans is that Sure enough, Vieira wanted to play the way he wanted to play, but then when he was missing certain players like Anderson, who's a ball-playing centre-back, really important for how they want to build out from the back, and you put James Tompkins in, you can't do it. You can't play the way you want to play out from the back suddenly, so you can't really play the way or build the way you want to play, which affects every other bit, like dominoes. And so then...
It's a bit like when Seb can't make it for the podcast, so we have to get Ruben. Like the drop-off is, or like the change in approach we have to take is just because he can't play it out from the back.
Exactly.
He's got to lump it long.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly the point I was going to end on that point. But then that's the problem. So then people want him to be more pragmatic and change. But if you are a manager and want to impose your philosophy on a team, you want to stick to your principles. But if the players you've got can't do that, what happens? You start losing and you look like an idiot for not winning the game.
That's right.
And so then from
there,
you don't see the philosophy.
Yeah.
And then you don't win games. So then what's the point?
Yeah.
And there's no scope to really have anything other than a very basic philosophy, I think, if you're a team at the bottom half of the table. That's the problem, right? Because if you want to improve, you know, you're set in this
situation. My philosophy is life is futile.
Yeah. Well,
we should all stop.
That's my philosophy. It is.
But if you're Palace, for example, you have a good season, you finish in the top half. What do you do? You don't have the money to... Because the idea then is, well, we've got to this point, we can now develop our play style into what? Like, more possession
style. But we know what it is, John. It's winner stays on.
Yes, winner stays on. No, once you get to that point, you can't get any further but until you bring in better players, technically.
And
better players,
technically,
yeah. You either sell players on and bring better players in, which is never going to work in the long run, because all you're doing then is just churning and you have to sell the good players on to bring in your other next good player with risk attached. Or you have someone who becomes your sugar daddy and you spend a lot of money and then suddenly you can buy players of technical quality, bring in a manager to do that. So if you're a team like Crystal Palace, what do you do? Like, the best chance you have is being a solid mid-table side, and that is going to rely on really, really smart, like, ownership, managerial.
Or you get one like run where you get high up the table and then you get picked apart because I was thinking this with Spurs. I was thinking this with Spurs earlier, and the same sort of thing where, like, a lot of what you need, like what Antonio Conte is talking about, I'm sure we'll talk about this later.
I want to talk about Spurs.
Okay, well, just like really briefly, still in Crystal Palace, is that the players he seems to want, like nasty players, are the ones with character, the ones that Crystal Palace have. But he doesn't have those players, so he can't play the way he wants to. He has quite good technical players, which mean you should probably play them in a different sort of way. Whereas Palace, what they tend to need, because they're always stuck at this level, is good characters who maybe lack some of the technical stuff. You can get away with having a couple of them, like Zaha and maybe Elise, but then all the other team does is kick them off the pitch and they can't play. And if all your creativity is from wide areas, the only way you're going to get the ball in the box is from crosses, and you don't score if you don't got a guy in the middle. And so life is futile.
Yeah. Well, life is futile. And indeed, let's round this section off by looking, just checking the sort of best odds for the next Palace manager to see what kind of names we have here. Who will the Eagles swoop for? Roy Hodgson is 1-6 right now. Paddy McCarthy.
He took charge on Sunday.
Yeah. Okay.
Former captain.
I didn't know who that
was. He was the under-21s coach.
Okay. Mm. Adi Horta.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah, that's exciting. Ralph Hasenhüttl. Okay. And Jesse Marsh, Marcelo Bielsa, who's on every list.
I would like to see James Tompkins try to play murder ball.
Yeah, that would be fun. Now, all the way down, well, you can get 33-1 on this. Thomas Tuchel. Oh, I think that's...
he fancies a bit of a change.
A new challenge, yeah. Listen, I saw Thomas. Pochettino on the list last week. I saw Pochettino at 14-1 at one point.
Really?
Yeah, which
well,
obviously won't
Well, he's living
happen.
In London.
This is, this is an interesting question, though, right? Because we've got Unai Emery at Villa, and we've got Julen Lopetegui at Wolves. Like,
is it impossible?
Palace are not an attractive prospect for managers like that, though. Like Villa and Wolves are.
Yeah, I suppose
they've got better squads, more money.
Yeah, they live nearer the countryside as well. Yeah, you know?
Is that a factor?
South London.
I would
wonderful.
Say so. I'm not saying South London isn't wonderful.
Have you ever been to Thornton Heath?
Yeah. Where's Thornton Heath?
Like near Selhurst, where we play.
No. Are there trees there?
It's a nice place.
Are there trees?
Some nice trees, yeah.
Oh. And grass.
It sounds like there would be a big watery bit as well. It's a heath. It sounds like it would be.
Yeah.
I know heath, that's not what heath means, but I think there'd be a big pond
means
somewhere.
Hill, doesn't it?
There'd be a pond where
it's
mysterious
hard to have a
murders
pond on
happen,
a hill.
I think.
Yeah.
Doesn't
sure.
heath mean like has heather on it? That's how I think of it.
I think it means there are mysterious murders.
I think so too.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, mysterious murders. I guess that's a good way of wrapping up that segment, isn't it? What's his name again?
Patrick Vieira.
Patrick Vieira. Let's, before we go to a break, let's discuss Spurs quickly, as you initiated there, JJ Bull, because very bizarre over the weekend. I mean, we can start with saying Southampton 3-3 Tottenham Hotspur, which is interesting in and of itself. Ward-Prowse scoring a last-minute penalty there. But the real drama occurred after the game in post-match interviews, but largely in the post-match press conference, where Antonio Conte appeared to blame everyone and everything apart from himself. I haven't got the quote. Can you dig out the quote for me, Steve, so I can read that in a moment?
Because, oh, it's long, though.
I'll pick the choice bits as you guys chat about this. But John and I have a friend who's a Spurs fan. We chatted to him about this last night. And he said, aside from how he feels about tactics and the system and winning, as a fan of the team, Conte has to go because he's massively disrespected the team. He said he hates him now more than he ever hated Jose Mourinho, which must be a lot. I mean, what do you think? Is it okay afterwards to say all those things that I haven't got to here to say yet, but I will say after you've said whether it's okay or not to say?
Well, I just started reading How to Win Friends and Influence People, right? Yeah. And it talks a lot about how, like, criminals who do bad things will often blame everyone except themselves. They'll never look inwards.
Conte's a criminal.
No, but this is the point, is that, like, people often fail to look inwards and see what's wrong with, never blame themselves. Which is...
Oh, look, I've got the quote. Steve put them in. Shall I read them for a bit of structure?
Yeah, sure. We'll come back to where they are.
So he described his players as selfish. He said that Spurs could change the manager, but the situation cannot change. He said that his team don't want to help each other. He said Tottenham's story is this. 20 years, there is this owner, and they've never won something. Why? He said... he said, the fault is only for the club. For every manager that's here, I've seen the managers that Tottenham have had on the bench. You risk to disrupt the figure of the manager and add to protect another situation in every way. I mean, also, he said, until now, I tried to hide the situation, which he obviously wasn't doing a very good job. But it's a bit mad, isn't it? Spurs did come back with this quite funny statement, sort of trying to say, oh, no, he didn't mean us. He meant, like, something else. He wasn't talking about Daniel Levy. He meant, like, a different thing. You misunderstood it.
Well, on one hand, I think he needs to look outwards and see that there are other factors of why it hasn't quite worked. On the other hand, I can sort of completely agree with what he's saying.
Do you?
Well, the players he has...
Then why isn't he doing as well as Pochettino did? If it's all the club...
Well, look, Pochettino had a team. He had, like, Alderweireld, Vertonghen, who at their peak. He had the France captain, Lloris, at his peak. He had Harry Kane, one of the best strikers in the world, at his peak.
He bought many of those players.
Human Son, he bought Alderweireld.
No one was saying these players were good until he was there.
That's true. And also, Antonio Conte, Spurs have spent nearly £200 million under Antonio Conte.
On nonsense, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, like, how much of that is...
I don't know. I don't know how much the club are buying players that the manager doesn't actually want. Jed Spence got bought for like $25 million or something like that. And Ryan Sessegnon.
I think he was a club signing, wasn't he?
That sounds like. There's a few of them that we've got there. So, like, Conte has a squad that is good enough to be amongst the top eight or whatever. But as Conte pointed out, there's a load of teams are going for those four slots. Conte just sounds like Mourinho now. Like, it's not his fault. But he could play a different way, maybe. But Conte plays this way and he knows that's what wins. And this guy's a serial winner. Like, everywhere he goes, he wins stuff and playing a certain way.
I would say I have to disrespectfully disagree with you because, the main notion here, it seems to be that Tottenham haven't won a trophy for 20 years, right? Like, we had a conversation 2 weeks ago about what the actual value of a trophy is beyond the league or the Premier League or the Champions League, for example. So there's that. Also, for large periods of the last 10 years, Tottenham have outperformed their wage budget, right? They just have.
They overperform in miles, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, the idea that because they haven't won a trophy means that they're a failure club, is it absolutely stupid?
I agree.
I mean, it's literally
the
stupid.
The fans enjoyed it for a long time when Pochettino was there. And once when he left the club, I remember seeing them lose to Newcastle at the new stadium. And they were dreadful. They had no width, no pace, no nothing. And that was Pochettino's squad building. I don't get it, why everyone loves him so much. Because
towards the end of his time there.
Yeah, sure. And whether that's his fault, whether he's buying Lo Celso and not players he actually definitely needs in these positions, or whether that's the club doing it, I don't know the insides exactly.
I forgot that JJ hates Pochettino. I forgot about
I think
with Pochettino, they literally had like two or three windows where they didn't buy anyone.
Yeah.
It was Lucas Moura
broke that duck of not signing anybody, didn't he? Lucas Moura.
You go through a lot of Pochettino signings, and not all, like, that's the same with a lot of managers, not everyone's very good. But this is my point. I don't know if it's Pochettino or the club doing it.
Yeah.
Whereas like Conte's come in as one of the best or most highly regarded managers in the world, and he was before before he started to melt down.
And they've given him tens of millions, hundreds
they've
of millions.
They've given lots of money, but again, is he getting exactly what he wants in, or what's Reguilón, was it his player?
Perisic is very clearly a Conte signing.
And he was
example.
Signed for free though.
Pedro Porro, who is maybe the most expensive, one of the most expensive wingbacks of all time, is very clearly a Conte signing. Who's also,
it could be club though, because you look at who the available upcoming wingbacks are, and Porro's been.
I think Pedro Porro's probably like. I'm not saying
Porro's been on like scouts list for years.
Of course, I'm not saying he wouldn't have been on the every top elite club will have every good player on every scouting list. So that's not really, that doesn't mean it's a club signing. But I would have thought that buying a very kind of specific technical wingback is most likely to be a Conte signing when you have Conte as your manager.
That is sort of relevant, because then you look at who the next manager would be and who's going to come in, and then are you going to bring in someone who will suit the players they've got just now? Like Porro is more of a wingback from what I've seen of Porro. He's more of a wingback than a fullback.
He is a wingback.
You could play him there, right?
Yeah.
So that means you've probably got to play him higher up unless you're playing a Klopp wingback back four system.
Let me ask you this. Let me ask this in two stages, right?
Yes.
Forget about where the football and whether Conte should be there for the rest of the season or not because of that.
Yeah.
Is it okay as a manager to say those things about your players and the owner and the club and the sort of culture of 20 years of failure after a game where you draw 3-3 with a team that can't score a fucking goal and a bottom of the league? Is it okay to say that and keep your job, or are you supposed to and again, I know we should acknowledge Antonio Conte had a very difficult year. There's nothing. I have nothing against him personally. I hope he is recovering from his surgery, and I'm sorry for the bereavement that he has incurred this year. Of course, that makes all of these conversations difficult. But at the same time, is it okay to say all those things and then keep your job? Like that's
probably
enough
not
to be
said. Because
anyway, right?
Yeah, because you can't. It's damaging to the club's reputation. It makes them look stupid, and it is damaging for PR. So that's one thing.
Forget about that and just think about the football. Is it better? Given that his contract expires at the end of the season anyway, I'm pretty sure, is it better to just keep him for the rest of the year because Newcastle look like they have less of a chance of finishing fourth than they did earlier in the season? Everyone else fighting for that fourth position, maybe Liverpool coming back into it, like there's an argument, it's a bit tough.
Brighton,
of course, could do it as well. Is it better to keep him and then just get a new manager in the summer, or is it better to pay the money now to get rid of him and try and find
someone
else?
From what the Spurs fans sound like, I would say it makes sense just to kill him now and then bring in Ryan Mason, give them some sort of galvanised thing for the rest of the season. It'll play in a nice attacking way, whatever, and then bring in whoever they're going to bring in next. But like, Spurs' thinking has to be long-term, what they're doing. They went from Mourinho, who in that documentary said all the same things that Conte is saying, exactly the same stuff.
Yeah.
Like, they're not nasty enough, so they can't play in that way. So then you've got to play in this. If you've got to play a more attacking way, you need to bring in a manager who does that.
Yes.
And then what you'll find probably is the same sort of issues where some of the players they've got don't have that winning, nasty streak in them. Maybe that's what the thing is. But do you need that? I mean, like, Guardiola's got away with it.
Like, what do you think?
I feel like people talk about Spurs in a weird way that ignores what Pochettino did a lot, because the squad is not that similar anymore to Pochettino's squad. I don't know. I don't like the idea that there's this inherent curse running through the club that makes all the players soft.
I mean, it's just Kane and Son and Dyer, isn't it? And Lloris.
Pretty much, yeah. It's those four. But like, Pochettino got them to a Champions League final. They came
playing Moussa Sissoko
and Harry Winks in central midfield.
Winks, yeah.
They came second the year that Conte won the league at Chelsea, and they came third the season before that. But they were like second all season. So like, it's not. The club isn't cursed. If Conte and Jose are saying all the same things and blaming the players for being too soft, I feel like that speaks to their managerial flaws that they have. I mean, it's a fairly recent thing with Conte as well, because it's kind of the first place he's really failed in the league that I can think of.
Sure.
I don't know if he's failing, though. He's pretty much
they're
doing
fourth,
okay.
But you know what I mean? Like, it's more underwhelming than his Inter or his Chelsea. And Mourinho's been kind of, at Premier League level with the top clubs. Like, it was clear from his last stint at Chelsea that he was a bad hire for Spurs.
Sure.
But it's not impossible to succeed with Tottenham. And the way managers speak, I feel like, passes the buck a bit. And basically, they should sack Conte now, give it Mason to the end of the season, and then bring Poch back.
I like how you got a lot more London when you said give it Mason.
Give it Mason to the end of the season,
Here's a point to make to you, John McKenzie. I feel like with Spurs and Daniel Levy, one criticism that I would have is that 5-6 years ago, under Pochettino, when they brought him in from Southampton and they unearthed loads of these great players, everyone talked about Spurs as like a system team and a progressive, exciting team. And then everyone copied it, right? But Spurs went in the other direction. They hired Mourinho and Conte, and now that they've got bigger revenues than Arsenal, they built their stadium, and they're like, we're here now, let's do a Galacticos thing, which obviously they're not actually doing. That's a massive, reductive thing to say. But you get my point, right? Like, weren't they kind of part, there or thereabouts, the originators of the kind of Premier League system thing, and then they just left it?
I think the chronology is important, right? When Pochettino comes in at Spurs, it's a very different club from what they are now. And I don't think Spurs would be here now in the way that they are if it weren't for Pochettino. And the reason why they've then gone, let's go for Mourinho, let's go for Conte, is because they
can for the first time.
Yeah, the way that Daniel Levy sees it is, we were previously a mid-table side. Pochettino carried us to the next level. Now we're here, we can do what top table sides do, which is bring in really elite managers. But the problem for me is that they've done two things wrong. One is that they've gone for a style of manager that doesn't reflect what Pochettino was doing.
Yeah.
So they went for very, very different coaches than Pochettino. And the other thing that they've done is that the place, I think the play style has maybe gone out of date, and they've carried on bringing in the same sorts of managers through. And so, yeah, there's that weird like progressive element where it's like, oh, they've gone for an exciting, risky manager who isn't being touted by a lot of clubs. They brought him in, made him big, brought him to that elite level. And then they've sort of, because they've got there, they've said, well, now we can just go back to the boring elite manager style of play, which is, it doesn't matter once you're there. You can do what you like and you'll probably stay there. And I just don't know if that's true anymore.
Here's a means of adding numbers to that. Martin Ziegler tweeted this the other day. This is about the top six teams and the percentage of change in their wage bill from 2017 to now. The only team whose wage bill has increased more than Tottenham is Liverpool, which has gone up by 75% in that time. Tottenham's has gone up from £127 million in 2017 to £209 million, up 66% in that period of time. It's transformative, isn't it?
It's worth saying as well that is much lower than a lot of the other elite sides. It's about £150 million below most of them. So the percentage change is obviously
still more than Arsenal, though.
More than Arsenal, yeah.
It's £3 million more than Arsenal.
Arsenal have done, as you could watch a video about on an Illustrated channel, Arsenal's finances.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Abhishek Raj.
Yeah, they've made a huge effort at reducing their wage bill at Arsenal. So.
And they've built a team that suits lovely football, that is both fun to watch and gets results, whereas Spurs have gone with the get results above entertaining football.
Get them.
Yeah.
And so the players that Conte is moaning about, he doesn't have the ones he needs to do what he wants to do, but they're not fun to watch, and they're kind of stuck.
Big upset, two upsides, though, yeah. Pedro Porro scored a goal in this 3-3, which was a banger. Very nice.
Yeah.
Also, Perisic scored his first goal for the club as well. I did find it funny that both fullbacks scored their first goal for the club. One of them was there for a good 6 months before the other one. But Pedro Porro looks a good player. Also, we haven't really got time to talk about it now, but quite interesting that since Hugo Lloris has been injured, Fraser Forster has come in. Bit of a change to how they play football, where they have a goalkeeper who...
Keeps the goal.
Keeps the goal. Is... reliable.
He's a big lad, isn't he?
Big lad. Fraser Forster.
Put him in charge for the rest of the season.
He fills more of the frame.
Get him in. That's a good point. Would you do that, Ruben? Would you put him in charge?
You pointed to John, though. Appoint John?
Fraser, no, he's a small boy.
Would you appoint me as Palace manager for the rest of the season?
If you had to pick a Spurs player to put in charge.
Genuinely have to think about that, yeah. Maybe.
Imagine that Ryan Mason wasn't available. Let's do this before we go to a break. Everyone can answer. If you had to pick a player to put in charge, don't say Harry Kane. Who would you pick?
Oh, in the player current
manager.
Spurs squad.
Yeah.
Ben Davis.
Yeah, that's actually fairly cultured. Interesting. Yeah, TJ, what about you?
Højbjerg.
You'd put Højbjerg?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Højbjerg for me as well.
Is Højbjerg?
Do you think Højbjerg is a good footballer?
Yes. 100%. He's a great footballer. Yeah.
Okay, so my Spurs supporting friend who has wanted Conte gone for a very long time hates Højbjerg and thinks he's
is your
just
friend Pochettino?
Bland rubbish.
Højbjerg was like Guardiola's pet at Bayern Munich back in the day. And he had some really difficult family stuff, I think, and then his career didn't go quite the way he wanted it to.
There's a reason he must play every game.
He was a brilliant. I think he was meant to be the next like big six, the number six kind of player. And you can see like he's really hardy. Like when he plays, he works really hard.
Yeah. He's the sort of player where apologies to Tottenham fans, more elite team.
In a good team.
Where you want a player who doesn't do anything flashy, but does everything right. He's the player that starts to get the plaudits when you've praised everyone else, where you go, and by the way, he just never puts a foot wrong.
I think Højbjerg adapts his game to those around him to try and make the team work better. So I think he could be a much better player than he is, but he has to do other stuff to make up for the holes that left by the
He's probably a victim of the stodgy style at the moment. As well,
yeah,
in that
maybe,
sense.
Yeah.
He's been playing in a two-man midfield as well, which I think means people don't recognise like how. I mean, one, you have to cover a huge amount of ground and etc. Especially in the Premier League, where everyone is overloading central midfields as well. So I feel like people don't give him the benefit of, you know, if you played him as a single pivot behind two eights, he probably would look.
He's missing
different.
Bentancur now as well.
Yeah. Okay. Well, also big Fraser Forster now in the England squad as a result of an injury. Yes,
Pope had to drop out. Yeah.
Pope's dropped out, so Fraser Forster in the England squad. There you go. It's exciting, isn't it?
It's good for England. Yeah,
it's exciting. Okay, and just before we go to a break, thank you to producer Steve here, Heathland, the Cambridge Dictionary, which I've always thought is a poor dictionary. I prefer the Oxford one.
The Oxford English Dictionary.
I prefer the Oxford, Urban's
I prefer the Urban Dictionary. I'd hate to know what the Urban Dictionary would say about Heathland.
Well.
Yeah. But the Cambridge Dictionary says about Heathland, defines as an area of heath. The same dictionary describes heath as an area of land that is not used for growing crops, where grass and other small plants grow, but
such
where
as
there
heather.
Are... Such as heather. Such as heather. But where there are few trees... Or bushes.
So a field, basically.
Basically a field,
and
yeah.
Where many murders happen.
And where many, many murders happen.
Joe, sorry. Could you please look up Heath and read out what Heath says?
On Urban Dictionary.
On Urban Dictionary, yeah.
Do you know there's a pope called Urban?
Or I could read it for you.
There's a few popes called Urban.
But don't read it first, just read it out loud before you even look
at it. Read it out loud.
Yeah,
okay.
We might not put this in the podcast.
Heath is the name for a guy with brown hair, pretty eyes, sometimes wears glasses, gorgeous smile, and has a very nice penis with excellent sexual powers. Used in a sentence, oh wow, I never thought I'd see a dick as hot as Heath's.
That's good.
Yeah.
Heathcliff.
Heathcliff?
Heathcliff.
Yeah.
From
Wuthering
the cat.
Wuthering, Wuthering, Wuthering Height. Ooh, that was hard.
There he goes.
Break.
It's break time now, isn't it? Yeah. Okay.
Isn't Heathcliff a cat?
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Hello, I'm Mark Chapman, and this week on the Athletic Football Podcast, we're bringing you a two-part special on the future of football. What will the expanded 48-team World Cup look like? And is it actually such a terrible idea? Plus, UEFA against FIFA, a Super League in disguise. How would you feel if your team became part of a multi-club model? There is a lot to get stuck into. Matt Slater, Adam Crafton, and Laura Williamson will be with us. Just search for the Athletic Football Podcast wherever you listen.
Ah, Heathcliff, we've returned from a break. What a lovely break that was. We just discussed more about Heath and his penis. Champions League, a quarterfinal draw. Oh, this is a good one. I was excited when I saw this, Steve Hanke, I was. Now, let me just tell you what these games are, okay? I'm going to tell you what these games are now. Real Madrid-Chelsea. Oh, that's good, isn't it? Let's have a reaction from a different person each time I read one. John, you're next, and I want your real guttural reaction, okay? Benfica-Inter.
Yes!
Yeah, that is a good one. That is a good one. Ruben, how about you? Man City-Bayern.
Cool.
It is a core. It's a high bar for you now, JJ. What can you do? I've come to you last because I believe in you, man. Okay? Milan-Napoli.
Hey.
Hey, indeed. And so stupefied is JJ Ball by that. Because, of course, his refers to the fact that there are three Italian teams in the semifinals. Mm. And actually through the route as well. Don't they face each other? I saw the route. Let me just get the route up. Because they've already defined the route.
Yeah, if Inter beat Benfica, they will play one of the other Italian teams.
Yes, Napoli, AC Milan, Porto. Sorry, not Porto. AC Milan, Napoli, thingy.
Inter and Benfica
and Inter. That's it.
They're all on the same side of the draw.
I'm just going to get that. Just not because I don't believe you, but because I can't understand what you're saying when you all say it.
The draw's been split into like the powerhouses and the underdogs.
Right.
There's three Italians.
Benfica Inter
on one
versus
side.
One of Napoli or Milan.
Yeah.
Ah, so there's three
Italian teams on one side of the draw.
Unless Benfica make it to the final, we're going to have an Italian team in the final. That's what we're saying. Yeah.
Pretty exciting.
It should be the first time in 6 years since Juve in 2017.
But yeah, the last time an Italian team won the Champions League was
2010.
Benfica Napoli in the semi.
Jose's Inter. Juve have lost a few finals.
Well, let's start by talking about Benfica because you are a Heath for Benfica.
I think I have a very nice penis.
Yeah. Tell us about that penis. What's the shape? What's the kind of shaft length?
It's a diamond shape.
What about
it?
the size and rotation of the girth of the head?
Well, let me
and
tell
don't
you.
Don't forget the scrotum.
Yes.
Yeah? Do it all again, but don't mention the penis.
I think the hardest thing about watching Benfica in this quarterfinals is thinking that if they go out, it'll be a real shame because they could achieve so much. I was trying to think of the next one.
Do you think
one.
Their success could be a bit cloaked? You know, people don't really see them coming, do they? This is embarrassing. This is so childish.
I think when Benfica are at their fullest, no one can really handle them. They're just all over everyone.
They're just all over.
Yeah. They haven't even begun to peak.
They haven't even begun
That's
to peak.
Right.
Yeah. Benfica are absolutely great. Mm. I really like watching them. They have good players throughout. They're one of those teams that, like Monaco in 2017, they'll get picked apart probably after this season. You've got Gonçalo Ramos up front, who scored a hat-trick in the World Cup. Remember him? He's great. Then you've got Antonio Silva, who's an academy graduate, come through in centre-back. He's at the next Ruben Dias. Play next to Otamendi, he'll remember. Alex Grimaldo at left-back, is one of the best in Europe.
Yeah.
The goalkeeper's all right. Which is useful.
Yeah.
In the midfield, they've got Florentino Luis, who's a Brazilian player who didn't make the squad for the Brazil thing. A lot of people were upset because he's done very well this season.
Right.
They're missing Enzo Fernandez, who's a big part of what they've done so well. And then they've got either David Neres, who used to play for Ajax, or Rafa Silva, who plays behind the striker. And then they've got wide forward wingers who are also very useful as well. And you've got João Mário, who's having the season of his life, as I kept saying in the video, because people kept saying that.
Let's talk about their talent factory of the past as well. Yes. It's quite incredible list there. Have you got that in front of you, JJ? Do you want to read that or do you want me to read it?
No, I haven't got it, but I can...
Well, I'll tell you. Darwin Nunez, Ruben Dias, Enzo Fernandez, João Félix, Edison.
João Cancelo, Bernardo Silva,
and Edison.
Di Maria.
Was Di Maria?
Well, Di Maria was a signing and then he went on. So this is everything they do. Is not only do they bring through these amazing players, but they also have a great scouting network and they find players in markets where they're maybe not ready for that big jump just yet. Bring them in, they develop them and then put them out for big money. So Di Maria went from Benfica to become a star at Real Madrid straight away. There's plenty of examples. Darwin Nunez is an example of that. They brought him in and then...
This is quite literally on this list, though, is like some of the most expensive players ever in their position, right? Like Enzo Fernandez is an example of that. Ruben Dias was extremely expensive. João Félix was, when he was signed, it was over 100 million euros. João Cancelo is like, what, just was 60 million was the... Was the if Bayern wanted to keep him, was what they would have to pay, which I don't think they're going to. Bernardo Silva would go for a huge amount of money.
Manchester City players, so they're all 50 million each. Yeah. So Edison, 50
Well, and Darwin Nunez was extremely expensive as well, right? I mean, that is...
The academy is interesting as well. There's a video on our friendly podcast in The Athletic.
Yeah.
That podcast? Anyway, there's an article in The Athletic as well talking about how Benfica's academy works. And they've had lots of the staff in place for a long time. So the way that they're supposed to be coached, these players, is inherent and it's really put in place and very strong because people in charge obviously have done that for a long time.
Mm.
But they don't have, I don't think of Benfica as having a set style of play. Which something else I talked about in this video. There's no Benfica way. They just have good players who win stuff. But one of the things to do in the academy is that all players should be able to play a minimum of three positions. And so you see the players come through are all very good, very fluid in different positions because they're fluent in it. Mm. They learn it as like a language at academy. Like Ruben Dias is a defender, obviously, but he started as a striker, went to midfield and defence. Bernardo Silva, multi-positional. João Cancelo, João Felix.
Yeah.
Could obviously play anywhere around. You could probably play midfield if you put him.
Yeah.
Like, that's great. So they just build great technical players. And like, tactics is very important in football, but that the technical level of a player is the most important thing, how good they are. So if you've got good coaches bringing through great players, then you can do everything the hell you want with them in your tactic system if they're good players.
Yeah. Well, it's working out for them so far in the Premier League this season. They are currently, after 24 games, top, having won 21.
They've only lost two games all season.
It's amazing.
And one of them is on penalties in a cup against Braga, who they also was the other team they lost to.
Wow, they've only lost one in the league. Yeah, that's incredible. Incredible. Well, there we go. We look forward to seeing Benfica face up against Inter. What do you think about that clash? I mean, you think Benfica presumably have a really good chance, John?
Yeah, I think so. I think both of the Milan sides sort of dragged their way through the round of 16. So yeah, I think that Benfica will probably see this as one of the most winnable fixtures they could have got. So yeah, I think it'd be fun to see how this one pans out.
Great. Real Madrid, Chelsea.
Yeah, that's an interesting, intriguing clash, isn't it?
It is an intriguing clash.
No one for the neutrals to root for in that one.
No, that's true.
Modric.
Everyone.
There's not that much romance.
God, I love
Luka
him.
Modric being that good at 37.
It's ridiculous. I think I was watching the Clasico last night, thinking about how good Modric is still. Like, how much longer? I need to go and see him play. Mm. I made it last night. I made up my mind that I need to go and see Real Madrid. Oh, I need to see Modric play.
Yeah, you need
if you
to
don't get to
Madrid.
Real Madrid this season, you have to go to Slavia Prague or wherever it is going to be. Where is it? Croatia Zagreb? Is that where you started
Dynamo,
out?
Dynamo, Zagreb. Yeah. But he was in the first team. Like, I did this thing ages
ago. Where's better to go on holiday, though, to be serious? I mean, Zagreb, maybe.
But Zagreb's not where the coast is, and that's the best bit of Croatia, right? Because it's more north in the country.
Okay.
So you want to have...
It's an unusually shaped country, isn't it?
It's just, well, I feel bad for what's the bit next to it? What's the country? It's just over the border. You can go into it. Is it
Bosnia?
Slovenia?
No, is it
Albania?
Is it Bosnia? Might be Bosnia.
Bosnia Herzegovina.
It might be. I'm trying to think. You can basically there. You can just go over the wall. But whoever they divvied up the geographic lines of the
Bosnia,
country.
Yeah.
However they did that.
Yeah.
Yugoslavia.
Well, you know how they draw the lines, right? Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
Oh. Croatia got a good. A good deal with all the coastline in that part.
That's true.
Yeah, so they've got all that. But
a nice run of beach.
Yes.
Yeah.
Two kind of interesting narratives, isn't there? There's the Chelsea, Graham Potter. One, are they good now? Are they bad now? Who knows?
I would. Do you know what? I can't think of an outcome I would prefer than for Graham Potter to win the Champions League with Chelsea. I really think that would be fun.
Do we think that Graham Potter is weirdly adopting a Thomas Tuchel trajectory?
Maybe he is.
I feel like Chelsea now play that 3-4-3 that Tuchel played.
He's gone back to his system.
To his system. They could potentially shithouse the Champions League. And then what do the fans do? Because the fans will be in a situation
they'd be so confused.
Yeah, they'd be like, we want to get rid of Graham Potter, but he's done exactly the same as what Thomas Tuchel
and
has
by
done.
Social contract, we now have to keep him for at least another 9 months because that's how
did
that
you
works.
See that clip of Graham Potter swearing at like some fans event? He looked so timid as he said the F word. I think it's because of the accusations of him not being angry enough in the thing. He was like, and then we'll try and win the fucking Champions League.
is it exactly the same as that new Jimmy Dimitriou comedy on Netflix? Have you seen him where he does the stag do bit?
Oh, no. You told me about this the other day, though.
So funny.
Actually, what happened is we went to the pub with your friends and you started that story, and then there was a wonderful moment about halfway through where you realised that it wasn't landing and you saw...
No, that was different.
Was that a different story?
That was a Jeff Goldblum joke I didn't tell well.
Oh, yeah. And then you backpedaled for a little bit. But it made it better.
It's funny. It's hard to tell someone why something's funny and you realise they're just sort of staring at you and not...
Yeah.
Just waiting for you to stop talking, basically,
It takes courage to back out of a story like that.
Yeah, I just lose confidence in it. If it's not going to land, just give up, start again.
Yeah.
Re-record the video. If it's shit, start again. You know?
Mm. What about Man City Bayern? Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know, really, isn't it? I mean,
Bayern lost yesterday to Leverkusen.
Man City seem to be hitting their stride at the moment.
I could see Choupo-Moting scoring the winning goal in this tie.
Could you see that?
He plays up front for Bayern Munich. I mean,
that's
it's not
true.
Beyond the realm of possibility, is it? But I think he's actually quite good, isn't he?
He's having a purple patch, I hear.
Yeah.
This is the tactical tweakest of fixtures, isn't
it? Yeah,
This is going to be Nagelsmann and
the most boring game, that's what you mean.
No, they're going to be thinking because it's not just that they're going to try and beat one another. They've also got to one up them each other in terms
It'll be 0-0 after the first leg and these two will say it was a really interesting battle.
That's right. Sometimes when those games happen, I sort of think it's just, you might as well just have the two of them. The managers go on the pitch on their own
just
and
tell
sit
people what
cross-legged in the centre circle opposite each other and just like put their hands on their head
and play
like
chess
this,
play
on
actual
their fingers
chess
on their temples play
just
chess but with their eyes closed
and say this is what we would have done if this game was played and then the other
and then it's
like,
decided on the underlying numbers
right? That's right
it's perfect. Okay, fine. Well, anyway, the point is That's really exciting. Milan-Napoli also is going to be interesting. Milan not playing well at the moment. Napoli
interesting then.
Still
Milan's
well.
One of Milan's best games of the season was against Napoli. They lost, yeah. I think, but they actually played quite well against them. But yeah, a lot of water has passed under the bridge since then. So
and a lot of water has passed through my heath. There we go. Now, it was, as you already mentioned, JJ Ball, Barcelona 2, 1 Real Madrid, Franck Kessié scoring a goal in 92 minutes. I heard it was a bit of a stodgy affair.
I thought it was really entertaining, interesting. By the end of the game, it had become a basketball game. They were right. Just going from back to front, no real control over it. Mm. But it's so massive, right? Because Real started to push towards the very end of the game. It sort of changed who was in charge of it a lot. It changed who was in charge of the game a lot. The middle part of the game, like towards the end of the first half and then the start of the second half was kind of muddled, I think, trying to remember back to it now. Vinicius Junior, very, very good. Barcelona, definitely miss Pedri whenever he's not there. They're just not the same because very few players in the world can do what Pedri does. Gavi was half decent. The commentators kept talking about how Gavi wasn't getting involved. I thought he was doing loads. And they did this thing later on where Lewandowski was mostly playing in like the left half space. So they're trying to like pull him away, I think, from the other side of the pitch where Militao was for Real.
That's interesting.
And they have, by the end of the game, when Barcelona were then winning 2-1, they kept going. They weren't like being sensible and kind of control things down. You had Araujo, I can't say his name properly, yeah. Araujo, was trying to win a header 30 yards inside the Real Madrid. He's a right back.
Yeah.
That's just no control.
He's a big boy.
It's crazy.
Isn't he?
Yeah, he's a good player. Yeah. I like the guy. I can't say his name properly. But basically, this is massive because Real had the lead. Asensio runs off and celebrates it. And that could have changed everything because Barcelona, sure enough, are top of the league and they are much further ahead now. But it hasn't been completely comfortable in the last little while. They've had a lot of quite fortunate 1-0 wins along the way as well. Mm. Really miss Pedri an awful lot. And that would be great. But when that was the narrative, when they were winning, that was huge. Ancelotti's a genius. He's managed to win this sort of thing. And then they go and turn it over. And then that end-to-end thing leaves them loose at the back. And Kessié comes in and hits that final goal. It was brilliant at the very end of the game.
Right. Good hit, wasn't it?
Good hit.
Really well placed, yeah.
I really liked Lewandowski's back heel pass to Balde.
All of it was good, yeah.
It was really nice.
Mm. Balde's come on something. Like he's a really good player, Balde. He's a La Masia graduate. He's come through playing basically as a winger, but starting at left back. And he sets up that goal to finish it. It was just, it was a good way to end that game. But it's funny because then Ancelotti, all the cameras just go to Ancelotti just chewing gum aggressively on the side of the pitch line.
Interesting. Well, like you said, Barcelona doing very well in the league at the moment. They are now 12 points ahead of Real Madrid with 26 games played. So you would expect that they are on the way to win. However, we know in the near future, there will be more stories related to more financial levers for Barcelona, still in a tricky situation come the summer. One other interesting thing I read, I think it was read this last night, that Real Madrid are opening contract negotiations again with Camavinga to try to secure him down, even on a longer-term contract, and give him a wage boost, but also add a buyout clause to his contract of €1 billion. Mm. There are three Real Madrid players currently who have that buyout clause. There's Vinicius Junior and Rodrigo. Can you guess who the third player is? Do you know?
Karim Benzema?
It's not Karim Benzema.
Is it not?
No.
I'm sure he got given
It's going to be someone really random, isn't it?
But otherwise, I wouldn't have asked the question that
Rudiger.
It's not Rudiger.
It's Militao.
It's Militao, It's Eder Militao.
I did read the Athletic this morning.
So just to let you know, if your club's interested in buying Eder Militao, it'll be €1 billion.
I'm sure they gave one of those billion euro release clauses to Isco as well and then realised that he was worth nowhere near that and flogged him.
But isn't the point of these that they have to do it by law in Spain.
It's obligatory in Spain and they all want to avoid a Neymar happening to them. They've like tripled all of their release clauses.
I guess you wonder if that's a sort of rule that will, you know, a bit like how Chelsea signed a bunch of players on 9-year contracts and then UEFA changed the rules immediately. I wonder whether La Liga will change the rules at some point, because if all of your release clauses are €1 billion, then it kind of defeats the point of having them.
A contract, yeah.
People thought that about Neymar's release clause though, didn't they? And then it got triggered.
And then somebody triggered it.
Yeah, 222.
Yeah. Okay, fine. Well, is it time for another break? Is that what time it is? Yeah, a quick break, and then we'll return to talk about more things that I don't know about yet.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep. You heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX is Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Ah, we've returned from a break. What a delightful break that was. Now, a quick wrap-up of things that else that happened over the weekend in England there. The first of which, and the most amusing, I think we'll all agree, was Manchester United 3-1 Fulham in the quarter-finals of the FA Cup. Now, this game, though, mired with incidents, wasn't it, JJ? Three of which, did you see this one? Shall I explain them? Yeah. All of which happened within the same 40 seconds. What happened in this game?
I was more doing the eyebrow, the mired, because, you know, it's one of those things we say, no one wants to see these scenes, but actually
everyone wants
actually
to see
I like
them,
the scenes a lot.
That's true. Nobody, we don't condone violence, but no. I do enjoy watching it.
Yeah, I don't I don't like it when you go...
Not in that game. I'm just saying, I'm just making a general joke. I enjoy it when all parties are consenting in the violence.
Guys, joking aside, the Mitrovic thing with the referee, Goody gets sent off and he should be banished to space jail for a few weeks.
In case they didn't...
If you didn't see it, so at the end, at some point in the game, Willian stopped a goal by punching the ball away with his hand.
Yes.
It's a definite handball. He got sent off because it denies a goal scoring opportunity. I think that's the rule.
Yeah.
And Mitrovic did not like this as the captain of Fulham. And he's been able to control himself a bit better this last season, I've noticed. He doesn't lash out quite so much, but clearly he lost his head, went up to the referee, and then bars the referee aggressively to make him talk to him and started pointing right in his face.
He sort of pushed his shoulder back in a direction that would force him to face him.
Yeah. It's the kind of thing that would definitely start a fight in a pub if you did it. You just can't do it. And because the referees aren't going to hit you back, they seem defenseless. And because they're like... It's like this like anti-authoritarian thing that you want to...
Yeah.
People don't want authority, especially when things aren't going well in life.
Yeah.
And the referee symbolises authority. And at Sunday League, if that had happened, it'd be a brawl.
Yeah.
Full-on brawl. I've seen awful things happen in Sunday League.
Oh.
And it should be made an example of these Premier League football, Champions League footballers. If you start shouting and swearing at referees and going at them... you should just be sent off.
There is more swearing at referees, isn't there?
They're not protected at all.
They sort of don't swear at them, but they kind of swear a lot loudly near them. I saw...
I found it very hard not to snap back if it was me.
I'm not going to name the player because I think every player does. This is just the example that comes into my mind. But it was from this game. It was a Manchester United player. And it was a decision that this player disagreed with. And right next to the linesman who'd just made the call, the player said... Oh, fucking hell. Like that, as if like, for fuck's sake. And you think, I mean, you haven't sworn at the linesman, but you virtually have. Like, there's a degree of difference there, but there, not really.
There's something in it. Like, in Sunday League, like, even I'll moan at referee, like nice old me. If something goes, that's obviously wrong, like an offside, but like, what are you talking? Like, that's clearly not an offside. Right. Clearly not.
Yeah.
But like, all right, whatever. Some people, I mean, you get really aggressive people who take out all the life's problems they have on this guy who is a symbol of their... displeasure with life.
Of Pappy.
It's just everything's gone wrong, so
Pappy,
the referees...
Pappy went for cigarettes.
I mean, they have to get chased out. Like, people have... In England, they've talked about it a lot with referees have had to be chased out of 11-a-side Sunday League games because they've been attacked like that. It's not saying this is the thing, but...
Referees that have to plan
back.
Their route home.
People copy what they see other footballers do, even grown adults. They copy what footballers do. They pretend to be injured and stuff like that. They do stuff they see on TV because everyone is mostly performing a role and so they have to have role models and examples to follow because no one knows who they really are.
Yeah.
And so they just copy what they see from the people on the TV and then they see them do that sort of thing so it becomes fine.
Do you know who you are?
No, but then I question it often.
Right.
Whereas maybe some people don't.
What about you, Ruben? This is your first appearance on the TIFO Football Podcast. Do you have a good sense of who you are as a person?
I think so.
Yeah?
That sense is withering away the more...
The more I talk to you.
Yeah. No, he's right that we need to do something about the abuse that referees get. I'm quite guilty of it at five-a-side level. Not like to the level that I'm going to spark a brawl and we're going to chase the referee out of,
right,
you know, the
vicinity. A little slap.
No, just like pass out comments with a smile to try and, you know, if something doesn't go my way. But this is like the third recent incident where a player has touched an official.
Oh, Bruno pushed the...
Yeah, and did Gabriel not do it against Man City as well? Something like that.
Oh, I don't know.
But like Bruno got away with it. Yeah. And so people will say, well, you know, where's the consistency if they now punish Mitrovic for it? But somebody... They need to, like, draw a line because it can't be accepted that.
Well, it's been drawn here, and it was quite funny. We should also point out that while the referee had gone over to the VAR to check the Willian handball, he also sent Marco Silva, the Fulham manager, off, who clearly said something rude. Didn't see what it was, but that was amusing.
I saw Alexander Mitrovic recently in Wandsworth Arcade.
Did he push you?
No, he was much more measured and calm.
Really?
In there, and... Which surprised me because it was a chaotic environment.
But these lads are all fine until there's one whistle to start it and one whistle to end it.
I actually would have liked him to be a bit more rowdy at that point because I was trying to play crazy golf and couldn't.
Right. I see. What was he doing in the arcade?
I think he'd taken his kids to a birthday party.
Taking his kids. Yeah. So he wasn't on a game?
No.
But if he was, what game do you think he would have been on?
The punching boxing.
The punching boxing. Or whack-a-mole, maybe.
Yeah, there was a
It's like that Stuart Lee anecdote about you want to give your fans what they expect of you. So if someone meets Stuart Lee, they want him to be kind of annoyed that he's there.
I told you this, he did that to me.
Did he? Good. Well,
he came into
Stuart
a pub I was working in. His wife was performing. She's also a stand-up comedian. His wife
Bridget Christie.
Yeah. And he came to the bar and ordered two drinks and I was really excited. And I got the drinks and I went back to him and I said, can I get these for you? I'm a big fan. And he laughed at me and said, no. And then that was it.
These days, if you offer to buy Stuart Lee a drink...
And what you want when you meet Mitrovic is for him to attack you and everything you stand for.
That is what I want, though, to be fair. Anyway, there we go. Man United scored almost immediately after the penalty that they also scored. So that game was kind of done.
Good finish,
and it was a good finish. Yes, it was by Marcel Sabitzer, wasn't it? Yeah. And then, of course, a Bruno Fernandes goal to put it to bed. I believe they got Brighton in the semi-finals. Manchester City have Sheffield United in the semi-finals. But, of course, City have already faced off Arsenal and Chelsea earlier in the campaign. So they've done the hard bit. And now you would expect... I got a romp to victory, aren't they? That's romp all the way to victory.
You ever romped before?
I romp on a daily basis.
I don't see you as a romping kind
of
man.
You see me as a romping man?
No.
You know, when I come bowling in, I mean, maybe I'm a bowling man. Might be a bowler, not
romper. Romping not have also sexual connotations?
Yeah.
To romp.
That's a proper tabloidy, headline-y word, isn't it?
But when one romps to victory, let's just look this up.
Don't do Urban Dictionary.
Obviously. I'm not going to do Urban Dictionary. Romp to victory.
If you have become successful within the world of media by romping your way to victory, Joe, I'm going to be very surprised.
No, look. no, I haven't actually. But this means romp to win something such as a race or competition very easily. That's all it means. Whereas I bowl around. I bowl around. That's what I do. Yeah? Let's just double check. I bowl. Bowl around definition. Bowl down or along. Again, the Cambridge, the worst of the dictionaries.
It's not Merriam-Webster, is it?
They bowled down the street on their new bicycles. I've never thought of being able to bowl on a bike.
You're going quickly, apparently.
I would try that.
Sound like you.
I thought it was more of a kind of, like a swagger, a smug sort of swagger, bowling around, having a good time.
No, you'd be absolutely battering it down like a bowling ball towards the pins, wouldn't you? You'd be just smash.
What am I doing then? If I'm sort of... Sashaying around?
Plodding?
Yeah. I'm not plodding.
Waddling.
I do waddle sometimes.
Like a giant penguin.
That's right. Anyway, we haven't got a lot of time.
Oh, yeah.
So let's discuss Brentford-Leicester. Because you guys went to this game. Brentford won Leicester City. Was it fun? There was a red card here. You haven't said anything for a while.
No, it was great fun.
Yeah.
It's the second game I've been to live this season, which is a lot less than I usually do. But I also forgot the first game that I went to live this season, much to the amusement of everyone. So, yeah. When this game, I tweeted this out, when this game finished, the guy in front of me turned around and said, which game was more forgettable, the one at Celtic Park or this one?
What's that little humble brag there? Yeah. The guy in front knew who
he was. He's getting spotted. Got to tell you about it.
Yeah. Do you know a guy spotted me on Friday at the Old Red Lion Theatre pub, which is the best pub in London to watch football in, right? But the guy, maybe this was genuine. His friend, I think he was too embarrassed, so his friend said to me, my friend thinks he recognises you. and summoned me over to the table. I was like, great. This does happen sometimes. I'm sure you will
Did
agree.
Did you go over when you're summoned?
I went over when I was summoned because at that point, I'm a passive guy. I just do what I'm told. If someone summons me, I just go. Just walk over, you know, try it.
Yeah,
I imagine you quite enjoy that awkwardness as well.
There's times where I do. I was with my family on this evening, so I didn't enjoy it that much. But the man, and again, he was a lovely guy, Avi, and his friend very nice too. But this is a representative of something that does happen sometimes where somebody will say, oh, I think I know you, but I'm not really sure where from. And I get the impression that sometimes they do know why or where. They're just a bit embarrassed to kind of say it, you know. So then they make me say why they know me.
Yeah,
and
also,
it's awful. It's
one like, person
I
knows
think I
you,
know
yeah.
you. Come over to the table and then tell everyone here, all of the other people who don't know who you are, by the way, tell everyone here why I know you. It's the worst thing.
And do you know how unimpressed those other people are?
Oh, my God.
I just don't want to... Yeah.
Someone asked me in the lift the other day if I was JJ Bull, and I said yes. Actually, I said yes.
Yes. It is nice when people say hi, though, just to be clear. It is nice.
You like it, don't you?
That's nice when people say hi. I think
that's
it's
true.
A lovely way to make... You make someone happy. I think that's a really good thing.
Agree.
I don't want to them think that at any point... I would be relevant to anyone else other than the person who sort of thinks they know me because they've seen me on YouTube loads.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. What about your family? Close friends?
What do you mean, my family?
Are you relevant
do
to
them? Do they recognise me?
Do you ever get spotted by your family?
Probably not, no. No. Yeah, fine.
Neighbours? Okay, tell me more about this game. I mean, actually, just say whatever you want about it. I'm not sure what you wanted to say about it. It's just in here because you guys went to the game.
Well, I really enjoyed watching the game. Mm. We were up behind the goal, right up high, and the game was quite dull because Leicester made it really boring.
Right.
And
in a good way?
Well, no, because boring is bad.
For them, though.
Well, not really. I mean, Leicester just let Brentford have the ball because that's the best way to get the ball back.
Yeah.
Rather than trying to win it, just let them give it to you.
Oh, Steve's written some questions here. I'm ever so sorry. I didn't see these before.
Sorry, I forgot to do that earlier. Yeah.
Yeah. The differences between watching a game live from an analysis point of view.
Yeah.
That's good, isn't it? And also, because you were in the tactical cam position, weren't you? Because when you're behind high up the goal, you can sort of see the shapes more.
I think you'd want to be side on mostly.
You want to be side on, do you? But I remember the tactical cam used to be
BBC
a portrait, didn't it? The BBC one. Is that not good?
No, I don't know. If it's really high, I guess you can see it. But like from where we were sat, it just looked like everything was really close. People are like, shoot when they're at the halfway line because where you're at.
You've got no depth perception.
Yeah, exactly.
I had that when I went to watch Palace's 4-0 to Spurs. I was sat directly behind the goal.
You really saw it.
Row number two. And all I could see was the back of Hugo Lloris.
I think from an analysis point of view that I find interesting, I mean, John talked about this at the time, was that you can, this sounds stupid, but you maybe know what I mean. You can see the different characters of the players in real life.
Yeah.
You just cannot see it on a TV.
No.
So you can't work out what players are doing out of possession half the time. When the TV shows you is obviously different, but then you don't see when there's a break in play that certain coaches come over and start talking to different sort of people.
Yeah.
You can see when something happens in one part of the pitch that it's clearly been a rehearsed set piece. You never think about it. Everything has been, that's on there. It's like a chess game. Everything's got a way to go and where to go, and they're always being directed in a far more NFL way than maybe you appreciate sometimes.
They've got a lot more in the head than you think.
A lot more in the head, yeah.
I also think as well that when you're there in the flesh, you get a much better sense of how good they are because it's much easier to put yourself in that frame of reference. When it's happening on TV, you're kind of like, you know, this thing is happening over there. But when you're actually behind the goal and you see these set pieces and you see how accurate the balls in are and the rotations on either side and where everyone knows where they should be, and it's just so much easier to be like, this is the elite level of football, even though, you know, Brentford Leicester is, you wouldn't think of as being.
The one that always gets me with that is watching goalkeepers catch crosses in the warm-up and how accurate the goalkeeper coach's crosses are. It makes you think, can he take the corners instead?
He's probably spent a good portion of his life just doing that, though, doesn't he? Yeah.
Well, we went with Ali Clarkson, who is a TIFO employee who supports Leicester, and he was telling us before who all the bad players were and why Leicester were so bad, because obviously a fan would know more than because they've watched so much of the football. Yeah. And talking about ask him whether Dewsbury Hall is actually good or Harvey Barnes actually good. What does he really think? And then you see the match in real life. And then Dewsbury Hall, for example, was just screaming his head off. I think it was at Tete on the right wing for Leicester. And I wouldn't notice this on the TV. Like, Tete is brilliant. Like, technically, he's a brilliant player. Mm. And he was doing stuff that you really want to see him. But he seemed isolated from everyone else on the team. It was like there was a team of Leicester and that one guy on his own who just seemed to be always on his own and not as part of the team.
Yeah.
And it's kind of hard to explain without it's you can just sort of see more of it in real life. And obviously, like, we go to games sometimes. This is the second game I've been to this season as well. I've hardly been to any games, which is probably bad considering what I do for a job.
Maybe.
But I'm just so used to watching it on TV as the analysis side. It is different. And then that's why I did my coaching badges, remember?
Is this the first game you've ever been to with John?
Yeah.
Did it enhance your experience?
Yeah, because it was fun. We were just chatting all the way through it. It was great fun.
Yeah.
And we were spotting all things that we liked, all the tactic stuff, weren't we, John?
That's why I did.
I bought John an armband.
He did. Yes, I saw it. That's Captain's armband.
Yeah. We had a really good day.
Yeah? Mm. Good. It's nice, isn't it? Yeah, Steve Hankey with the big R.
Then we went to the Heath.
And then you went to the Heath. There we go. Well, there we. I mean, well, let's dig into Brentford set pieces more on a different day, because I know there's plenty to discuss there, and now you've seen them in IRL. We can spend a little bit more time discussing them another time. One thing I forgot to mention about the Man United-Fulham game, by the way, was Palhinha was the man of the match, even despite the fact that it was 2-1 at the time that he was recognised. But you mentioned him before, didn't you? A fantastic player for Fulham this season.
Palhinha.
Yeah.
Yeah, I absolutely love that guy.
How often is a midfielder of the losing team in a game that's 3-1?
A defensive midfielder
named the man of the match. I mean, that's pretty, it's an impressive performance.
If you're so good at it that you get recognised, that's kind of rare, because often there you are just really good and don't get picked up. But it might be one of those things that it makes the pundit or whoever's choosing the man of the match look clever, because they've spotted this thing that now everyone knows about.
I actually think it was Steve McManaman who was doing the comms on that game? I can't remember.
It was Lee Dixon.
Lee Dixon it was, you're right. I think Lee Dixon's problem was that he couldn't pick a United player, because until they scored the penalty and were given the penalty, they were fucking shit in that game.
they were.
And it would have been embarrassing to pick one. So he did a good job and picked the best Fulham player. There we go. Fine, I think that's the end of the podcast. Is that right, Steve Hankey? Yeah, big nodding of the head there. Rating out of 10 for Ruben Pinder's performance, JJ Ball?
I'd say 11.
11 that's out of 10.
Beyond a solid. That might sound too patronising, actually. I'm going to say 10.
Yeah, just say 10. Yeah.
I'll say 9.5 to sound even slightly less.
You're going to say 9.5.
There's always room for improvement.
Yeah. Fine.
I should have done that. It's room for improvement. Always.
That's true.
Mine's a 3.
Yours is a 3?
Yeah.
You think you've done a 3?
Yeah.
Why do you think that?
I've talked too much. We didn't get enough out of John.
I don't think that's true. I think John talked a lot at the beginning and then took a breather.
You didn't.
And then
you didn't talk enough at the beginning.
Maybe it's like the Legends of the Classical, which is all basketball.
I don't know about
See,
you.
See, I'm warm now.
I'm sick of it.
I think we shouldn't blame the players. We should blame the manager.
Yeah, I agree.
This is a problem then. You play too much Rocket League with John. So you're the board. Ali want to hear more from John, but you talk to him all the time on Rocket League.
I've already heard what he wants to say. Yeah.
You see? So this is the thing.
I shall no longer talk to Joe on Rocket League.
Yeah. Maybe we should all start playing Rocket League. Not do a podcast anymore.
Maybe we should record the podcast playing Rocket League.
We suggested this and we started doing deep.
Oh, that's like a good idea. It's a good idea.
We started, yeah.
The problem is that I take on a completely different personality when I play that game, and it's not fun.
It's
for
not
an
very
audience.
Nice.
There was a genuine suggestion when we do like a Tifo staff meeting while playing Call of Duty one day. It was just an idea. It might be a good
video. You
played
Civ 6 a lot, didn't you?
No, that wasn't me. He played that, and Alex Stewart used to play Civ 6 as well.
Henry used to play, and Craig used to play as well.
What do you play? You play any video games?
I just play the F1 game.
You play the F1 game?
Yeah.
Do you have a steering wheel?
I don't. I'm not that much of a loser, but...
I think that's cool.
Yeah. Well, no, it looks more fun, but I'm just very conscious of how...
Yeah. Oh, how other people can see you, even though they can't see you do it. However,
by the way, do you know remember when we went to the Red Bull racing?
Is this a humble brag, is it?
No. We made a video about this, but the guy, the young e-driver,
Sebastian Joe,
I saw him tweet yesterday or the day before. He'd obviously been this is a professional e-sports racer. He'd obviously been in a race, and he'd clipped a little bit of it, and his comment was like something like, oh, great to fucking...
It's like the amount of points lost because of shitty netcode.
The amount of points lost because of shitty netcode. And then you see in the clip, he's driving alongside another car. There's nowhere near each other. And he has a little impact off nothing, off the air, and then gets...
And that's his job. That would be infuriating.
Can you imagine all the times you play Warzone or something? Yeah. Imagine all the times that, you know, if you're actually doing that for money and you get killed because of some...
Well, as my
thing.
Close friends will attest, unlike the things I've learned recently in how to win friends and influence people, I blame everyone but myself often, if I'm in a bad mood. If I'm in a good mood, I can be positive and just drive a buggy around trying to run people over.
I would like to clarify, no disrespect to people who do own the steering wheels.
Sure. I want to embolden you with the confidence to be able to do that and not worry about it.
Get
it's
your
great.
Steering
Get
wheel.
A steering
my,
wheel.
So when, Live I, your dream. When I play that game, my dad watches me play and he acts as like my mechanic on the radio.
Nice.
So he's like, don't do anything stupid. you've got a 5 second lead on this.
I love this.
And then my brother comes in and tells me to turn right when I need to turn left, and turn left when I need to turn right, try and put me off.
I like it. You should get a steering wheel.
We should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You should get the whole rig.
Get the whole rig.
Yeah, proper seat and everything where you're sitting back like this.
I mean, why not? I just go nuts. If I was into that, I would go down.
Yeah, I would too. If I was into that.
My brother-in-law has one. I've tried one.
There we go.
It's good fun.
What's your dad's name?
Jack.
Jack! Sort it out, Jack. Come on. Get Ruben the gift of his dreams. Maybe for Christmas. The steering wheel for the pretend car. Yeah?
We'll get it now.
Anyway, just a quick thing before we finish. I know we've got to finish, Steve. Thank you. I know we've got to finish. But I just want to tell you what Arsenal's last 10 fixtures of the season are. This is quite an exciting bit for the end, isn't it? It's an exciting bit for the end. Now, what have we got here? Arsenal's final 10 fixtures in the Premier League. Home to Leeds. Away to Liverpool, away to West Ham, home to Southampton, away to Man City, home to Chelsea, away to Newcastle, home to Brighton, and then away to Nottingham Forest and home to Wolves. That is not easy.
That's a pretty normal run, isn't it?
I would say...
I don't know why that's interesting.
Oh, no. Like, why?
They're
going to win most of those games.
Well, listen. Yeah, away to Man City, home to Chelsea, away to Newcastle, home to Brighton. It's a tough run.
Those are the tough ones.
The two before come against teams that are basically on the verge of relegation, who will be doing absolutely everything to try and win those games.
Every game in the Premier League is a difficult game.
Every game's a difficult
game.
There are no easy games. Well, there we go. I thought that was going to be a bigger...
Guys!
The last 10 games, a Premier League side. A Premier League side.
Every single one's a Premier League side.
Yeah, it's only four. You've only said four.
Premier League side. Wolves.
Hey! And there we go. Hey! That's the end of the TIFO Football Podcast. Thank you to Ruben Pinder.
Thank you.
JJ Ball the Bullard.
Yes.
And John Heathcliff McKenzie.
Thank you.
Au revoir. We'll see you next. Well, I won't be here next week or the week after. Busy. But Michael Bailey will be here for one of those weeks, and then for the other week, we'll just fucking work it out.
I guess.
Yeah. But until then, ta-ra, bienvenue, and all the best. Goodbye.
Athletic.